Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Brooke Losby, guest hosting for Jen today, and a special thanks to Markham Search for sponsoring. Today, we have Randy Greaser as our guest. Randy is the founder and CEO of Achieve Center for Leadership and Workplace Performance. He is a visionary leader of professional development training within the industry. Randy is the author of Ordinary Leader and the co-author of The Culture Question. He gives presentations on leadership and management principles to a wide range of audiences in business, education, health, and government settings. Randy believes that leadership requires us to be intentional about what we do and how we do it. Welcome, Randy.
Thank you for having me on your show.
Thank you so much. Well, we'd love to start off just hearing a little bit about your history and how you came to do this work you do and write your most recent book.
Yeah, well, I mean, at the core of the work we do at our organization called Achieve Center for Leadership and Workplace Performance is really a belief that people should like where they work. We do a lot of training for organizations, but we also do consulting work in the area of mediation and climate assessments. And one of the things that we find ourselves spending a lot of time on is helping organizations dig out of some of the toxic circumstances they find themselves in. And so when we decided to write this book on, we really kind of zeroed right in on that belief statement that we have, that we believe that people should be able to like where they work. And what we found in our research for this book and the book we, for the culture question, we surveyed over 2,400 people. And what we found is, you know, interestingly, most workplaces are okay. You know, it's not as though workplaces are all workplaces are toxic and people are suffering. That definitely is there. That's definitely happening. But really what's happening and what we see is that people are stuck in this mediocrity, or as my teenage daughter would say, it's just kind of meh there. And so our goal and our hope for this book was really to help people, no matter where they are on that spectrum, from unhealthy to healthy, to get a little bit more healthier.
Great. And I'm just so curious about you and your passion for this type of work. What spawned you to dive into cultures and organizations?
Yeah, I mean, at the core, I'm a leader within an organization. I lead a team of about 20 people and 100 trainers throughout North America. And one of the things I've learned, and one of the things I'm passionate about is human relationships, right? And I take the philosophy, leadership philosophy, that we need to be caring leaders. We need to be human leaders. And really moving away from kind of that old school management style of leadership, which has some short-term, you know, short-term it might get you results, but long-term I found it much more effective to help my team work towards our common vision and mission through an empowering approach. And so, you know, that who I am as a person and who I am as a leader is kind of an extension of how we went about writing this book. Even, you know, I'll make sure I do a shout out that I didn't write this book alone. I co-authored it with three of our other leaders here, which in and of itself was an interesting exercise. But I mean, I guess to circle back to your question, I believe firmly in relationships, and I'm passionate about helping, other leaders think differently about how they go about creating cultures where people like to work. I think a lot of the times some of the literature out there on culture has focused actually on perks, right? When I see some of the business magazines list the best places to work in, I see things like, you know, well, there's a free foosball table and there's yoga on Fridays and, you know, maybe there's even a bring your pet to work day, even though I'm allergic to pets. and we confuse those sort of perks with what we have come up with as really what we really need to be focused in on, which is healthy culture.
Neat. So I'm curious, what are the qualities that make a good leader?
Well, I mean, the most important, maybe this isn't a quality, but it's something important to establish, or it's a principle of leadership, is trust. I firmly believe that trust has to go both ways. Of course, how do you establish trust is you actually have to know people. You have to spend time with people. You have to be in relationship with people. I'm glad you asked that question, because one of the most exciting things that came out of our research into the book, we asked participants 20 questions and correlated those 20 questions against the statement of "I like where I work." And what we found as the highest correlated statements was "I trust my direct supervisor." And again, like, we get that trust is good. Most leaders want to be trusted, right? And when we have trust as a leader, people will work towards a common vision and mission, not because we're coercing them or forcing them or giving them care or beating them with a stick, but rather because you're able to influence them because you've trust them. And so the second correlated statement, the highest correlated question to that statement, was "My direct supervisor cares about me as a person." We didn't expect this. We didn't know this. We didn't plan for this. That was a surprise for us. And the learning here is that if you want to develop trust as a leader, you have to actually care about your staff. Now, I can go into more detail about what that means to be a caring leader, but I'll let you maybe think about that connection, that trust and caring connection, which was quite surprising for us.
Yeah, so that makes me wonder, is that trust and care, is that subjective for each person, or are there objective things that every leader can do to create that type of an environment?
Well, the answer to your question is both and, right? I mean, I think there's certain things that people can do. I mean, at a fundamental level, caring leadership is that I think about my staff and employees more than just a means to an end. They're not just a tool I use to make more money or to be more well known in my industry. But when the rubber meets the road, that I care about them as human beings, right? I mean, we're going through even with our own internal staff right now. I have one staff who's on compassionate leave because her husband is very, very ill. I have another staff member who has a child who has a medical issue and has been off more often. And how do I respond to that as a leader? Like, at the end of the day, do I respond in the human way? And it doesn't have to be that complex. Sometimes it is just, do you say hi to people? Do you ever, ask someone what their weekend plans are or what they did on the weekend? One of my friends read this section in the book and came to me and said, "Randy, I've been working in this organization for 2 years, and my supervisor doesn't know I have children." And I said, "Well, your supervisor shouldn't be asking you whether you have children, but your supervisor should be saying, what are you doing on the weekend, or how was your weekend, or where are you going on vacation?" And when you have children the same age as me, which is 13 and 15 years old, and my daughter, by the way, was just singing at a music recital today, and she's got a basketball tournament on Thursday and on the weekend, and my son does as well. And so when you ask me what I'm doing on the weekend, what am I going to say? I'm with my kids, right? And so at a fundamental level, it doesn't mean we need to be a therapist. Now, just as a fun fact here for you, I'm actually a clinically trained social worker by background. That's where I spent most of my career prior to starting Achieve. But I don't do therapy with my staff, but I do ask, how are you doing today? How are things going with your family? What are you doing this weekend? And that demonstrates that that I'm caring. So that's a simple, practical thing people can do.
Yeah, I was just going to say,
think about how often that actually doesn't happen. As leaders, we get too busy with our operational needs and demands, and then we never get to it.
Good point. So understanding the value of taking the time to get personal. Is that what I'm hearing?
Absolutely. You have to make it intentional, right? I mean, at the end of the day, there's a never-ending list of things we could, would, and should like to do. And let me maybe bring this back to an employee perspective as well. It's not just leaders who struggle with this. It's peers. It's your coworkers, right? Most of us can think of a coworker who just like, you know, it's just like they walk into the office, they don't even say hi, they put their head down. They may do very good work, but there's no relationship there, right? And at the end of the day, sometimes there's a lack of sharing of information. We send an email instead of talking in person, which leads to a mistake because we haven't been able to go into great details of what if we would have talked in person. And so all of us are a little bit guilty. And so from an employee perspective, if you want to influence your workplace culture, what are you doing your part in that? Are you saying hi to people? Are you, you know, I one of my favorite blogs I've written recently is the value of chit chat. There's nothing wrong with chit chat. When chit chat turns into a, you know, a 40-minute conversation about my Uncle Bob and Aunt Bertha, you know, that's a bad thing. But, you know, a quick, how are you doing? And so that's a challenge to employees and leaders alike.
Good point. So everybody has a responsibility, it sounds like, in the workplace to create a healthy culture.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, at the end of the day, it is everyone's responsibility. However, if leadership's not on board, it's going to be very difficult to get traction.
So that brings me to a really great question. How do I know if I'm in a healthy culture in the first place?
Well, yeah, I mean, culture is a bit of a, you know, hard thing to actually describe, right? So let me do my best. The simplest way we've learned to describe culture is it's how things work around here. How do people interact? It's how people behave, right? And so you can feel and you can see culture in certain ways. When I walk into an organization, I can very quickly just take a quick lay of the land and figure out, is this a healthy culture or not? How am I greeted? Am I greeted? Do people look up and talk to me, or do they just give me a token look and they don't even smile? When I meet the supervisor and the supervisor walks me by the receptionist, do they introduce me to the receptionist or not? What about people's workstations? Are they sterile? Are they clean? Are they void of any personal artifacts? One of my staff members, probably the funniest thing that we have in our office, has a picture of his cat. And he, by the way, his cat has an Instagram account. But the point is, he feels comfortable enough to add his personal touch to his workstation, right? And in workplaces where I've seen that are a bit more unhealthy, I see people scared to do that. They don't want to put a picture of their loved one or their cat on the wall. What might people think? Or an inspirational quote that is really meaningful to them, but other people might not know about. So just in that way, you can tell whether a culture is healthy or not. Let me go on and explain this. When you talk about your culture, what do you say? What descriptors come to mind? Do you say things like, my workplace is fun, or my workplace is boring? My workplace is supportive, or my workplace is competitive? What are you proud about your organization? And more importantly, what are you embarrassed about in your organization? Those are the sort of questions that get you to think about, do you have a healthy culture or not?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And in terms of coming in as and you kind of discussed how if you can come into a workplace and quickly assess by the feel and what you see, and how the staff's interacting and their almost their presence in terms of like, are they in the present moment able to greet you? I'm curious if I'm a job hunter and I'm trying to find the right type of a culture that's a good fit for me, what are some things I can do? What are some questions I can ask to see if I'm in a healthy place?
Oh, that's great. I'm glad you asked that. I just on Thursday, my blog post that I wrote was written specifically for this. It was titled, Why Do You Like Working Here? And I wrote that from an employee's perspective because I had just went through an interview process for our own team. And I'm always surprised at how few potential employees ask the interviewing committee, because most interviewing committees give people the chance, you know, do you have any questions for us, right? You know, and a good candidate will, you know, have prepared some certain questions. But the most important question you can ask is, why do you guys like working here? And what do they say to that response? Do they go, well, it's got good parking, or, you know, I like the free fruit in the office, or, you know, there's a really good bonus package. Or do they say things like, I really like the people I work with, or, you know, I like that I get to work in an organization, the purpose is meaningful. We're doing stuff that matters and makes a difference. That's why I like working here. And so that's in my opinion, if you want to work in a healthy question, you need to add that as a potential, looking for a job, you need to add that to your list. But the other things you can do are just, you know, one of the things you can do ahead of time is spend some time on their website. How do they talk about themselves? What is their mission? What is their purpose? And how do they even talk about their mission and purpose? I was talking to someone the other day who was interested in partnering with our organization to provide something. And the original email said, we're looking for partners who align with our purpose and mission. And for me, when people talk about their purpose and mission, that gets my ears up, right? I'm like, okay, this is, you're talking my language now. I get it, right? And yet when I actually asked them the question, they had a very, what do you mean by that? What do you mean by does our purposes and the mission aligned? And you know what she said to me over the phone? I can send you some documentation about that. And I was like, seriously? You can't verbally tell me what your mission and purpose is and why you're looking for synergy? You have to send me some documentation. And so, you know, again, those are the things that you can focus on. And if you are fortunate enough to get the interview, to, again, put when you walk into the organization, think differently. Don't just walk in to do the interview. Look around. How are people greeting you? All those things that I talked about previously about some of the signs of a healthy organization.
I absolutely agree. I always look for whether people are smiling or scowling, if there is silence within the office, or if there's like a healthy workplace chatter going on. I also suggest for my clients when they go into a job interview, and I don't know how you feel about this question, but I have them ask, too, if you could change one thing about this company or organization, what would you change? And that tends to elicit whether this person even feels free to have a voice. You can tell if they're guarded in their response, if they give a canned response, or, you know, if they have something actually original and unique to say.
Yeah, I like that question. And if you really want to dial it in on culture, you could even add that, right? What about your company culture would you like to change?
I like that.
And you got to be careful here, because people, the interviewing committee might not like you asking those questions, but maybe you don't want to work there then, right?
Well, I think that's a very good point as well. Is, you know, you always want to bring something to the interview that would make or break whether or not you'd want to decide to work there anyway. That's why you're asking the questions, to see if it's going to be a good fit for you, right?
Yeah, and that comes down to, I mean, are you looking for any job? Or are you looking for a job that's a good fit for you, and you value culture? At the end of the day, if what you value is bonus and foosball tables and perks, then go look for that, right? But if you truly want a healthy culture, you need to move beyond it, right? You know, like, why do people like working here? What is the purpose of the organization? Do people get along with each other? How do you guys manage conflict when that happens? Do people work together as teams, or is it mostly heads down, focused on your own thing? Those sort of questions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Daniel Pink talks about in his book, the three key qualities to have in a workplace are autonomy, mastery, and purpose. And I think purpose really goes to the effect of having, feeling like you're a part of a team and that you're committed to doing something together. There's a purpose to your being there. There's a meaning to your work.
Yeah. And I would go a little bit further with that and say, that one of the things you really want to look for is aligning your purpose to the organization's purpose. You know, one of the most recent person we hired, one of the reasons that we hired her, she wasn't necessarily the most skilled candidate. In fact, I actually told her that. I said, we're hiring you, but I want you to know why I hired you over someone else that was more skilled. It was because you were so excited about our purpose. You kept coming back to the fact that our purpose aligned with your purpose? And so when it comes to purpose, it's about an alignment as well, right? Does the organizational purpose align with your own purpose as well? And that's what you really want to look for as a potential candidate. Not just that
that's,
it's a good
that's
purpose,
right.
but it's a purpose you care about.
Exactly. And that's also what organizations are looking for with the people that they're hiring, because they're really interested in someone that's going to be able to be there in the long run. And that type of alignment that you're talking about is what really creates stability within an organization when your purpose and your values align with the mission of organization.
Absolutely. And to go on with that comment about telling someone they weren't as skilled as someone else, one of the things I believe as a leader, and I've seen this time and time again, obviously someone has to have the aptitude to do the job, right? You can't hire someone to do customer service that's scared to talk on the phone. You can't hire someone in marketing who has no clue what Facebook, how to even log on to Facebook, right? And so, but I've learned that if people have the aptitude, they're going to learn things quickly and they're going to care about doing it well and not making mistakes because they align with the purpose. So I'm not saying that, you know, we should go out and hire people who don't have the skill set, but at the end of the day, I would way rather have someone who more aligns with our purpose and has the aptitude to become a highly skilled person than to hire just the skilled person. I'm always amazed at how many organizations are still hiring for who has the most experience and who has the most skill, right? I mean, that, to me, that's such an antiquated way of creating a team, as you mentioned, of people who want to stay there long term. If you want people to stay there long term, focus on fit for the culture, and then they're much more likely to stick around.
Yeah, that's true. And I think many of the more cutting edge organizations are keeping in mind that you can't teach personality. If you have somebody that's trainable, like you said, that has the aptitude to achieve the goal, that's going to be a better fit within the organization than somebody that necessarily has the skills that they're looking for, but doesn't fit within the culture and doesn't have the right personality.
Absolutely.
So I'm curious, organizations, there's always going to be some type of conflict or, you know, communication issue or a misunderstanding. How do healthy cultures deal with those types of conflicts within the workplace?
Absolutely. So in give you a bit of a summary of one of the chapters in our book. In our book, we highlight kind of six key pillars that organizations need to focus on in order to be a healthy workplace culture. And one of those pillars is practicing constructive conflict management. Because you're absolutely right, right? I mean, we are human beings. From time to time, we are going to have issues. We're going to become in conflict. Now, one of the things, of course, is that when we have conflict and we have a healthy culture, when we have an experience of working together, when we like each other, when we communicate, when we know each other, when I know who you are, you might say something that offends me, but because we've been chit-chatting, because we have lunch together every once in a while, because we work on teams together, I don't automatically jump to the assumption that you're this really mean, nasty person. Rather, I'm much more likely to go, hey, what you said and what you did really bothered me. I want to talk to you about it, right? Whereas when we don't have a history of working together, and so many of these things overlap, right? I mean, one of our other pillars is meaningful relationships, building meaningful relationships. And another one of our pillars is creating peak performing teams. Because again, when we have meaningful relationships at work, when we're used to working together, we're going to have problems. And most of the time when we have a problem when we work together, we talk it through and work it out. And so we have a history of dealing with issues. But when we have workplaces that don't focus on meaningful relationships, where everyone eats lunch on their own and they don't take breaks together, when chit-chat isn't allowed. I mean, I literally the other day had someone in training I did said in their workplace they're not allowed to talk to each other in the hallway. And I was like, in the hallway, when you're walking past and forth, this is a brilliant time to talk to each other, and yet your organization has prohibited it? Seriously? So what happens in that workplace when all of a sudden there's a conflict? We don't have any knowledge of each other, so we right away jump to, you know, you're this terrible person, and of course, when we don't have the tools to resolve conflict, we end up taking a ton of time, right? We have water cooler conversations. As managers, we're spending a ton of time dealing with it, and those involved, you know, you know, in my previous career as a community-based counselor, I had someone who showed up for counseling for depression and anxiety and relational issues. But when I dug away at what was going on, it was her workplace. And she was so anxious and so stressed because of the conflict in the workplace that she would go to work, and her number one job was to avoid interactions with this person. And when I teach, particularly to C-suite leaders, I say, how much work do you think is getting done here? So conflict is not, managing conflict is not just about, you know, a humanity. It's not just about that we want to create workplaces where people like each other, but it actually is about productivity too. Because when we hate each other, no work is getting done. We're not sharing information. We're sabotaging. And so really we need to focus on, you know, again, practicing creating a workplace where people know how to resolve conflict effectively.
Great point. So it's actually, the idea is that, you know, creating, establishing that rapport creates a more efficient organization. I think that's a fantastic parable. So I'm, you know, in terms of like creating that type of a culture where people have those types of, you know, relationships established, do you think it's better to do kind of more informal, allow the employees to just kind of informally create their own teams and alliances? Or what are the duties of the organization in terms of setting up structures or programs or events to facilitate that?
Obviously, there's going to be some organic things that happen, but I believe most cultures are created intentionally. If we allow cultures just to happen organically, we will create a culture, but it will be, as I said in my introduction, it'll be average. It'll be meh, right? Or it'll be bad, right? And so if you want a healthy culture, you got to put energy into it. You can't just leave it to chance. I mean, you might get some things right, because one of the things we found in our research and interviews with people too is that, again, they didn't necessarily think that their culture was terrible, but they would say things like, this part of my culture is good and healthy, this part I don't like. Right. And that's what happens when you do it organically. And so when you're intentional, you want to do, you know, you want to be mindful about certain things. Right. So let's take that example of teams, you know, effective teams. Well, one of the things we do here intentionally when we create teams is that we want to make sure there's someone on our team, what I call is a cultural influencer. Right. And what I mean by a cultural influencer is they are someone that maybe doesn't have senior leadership experience. They might not even be a leader at all, but they care about the culture, right? I have someone within my staff who's been here numerous years, and she's very protective of our culture, right? Like, you know, we've worked hard to create this healthy culture. We need to keep it the way it is. And so we want to make sure we have those type of people on our various teams that are thoughtful about, remember, again, what is culture, how we interact, and how we behave with each other. So what is acceptable, what is not acceptable, and where we have clearly defined what is acceptable and not acceptable is by clearly defining what we call our values. And our values are things that are for us. They're not, our values are not marketing messages for the public to see. They were jointly created with our staff. There's five of them where we say, this is how we commit to interacting, right? And one of those values, just to give you an example, is flexibility, right? You know, we really don't like people who have a that's not my job mentality. And so when that happens, one of the things that we in leadership need to do is hold people accountable. But the interesting thing is, when you have cultural influencers on your team, is that they begin to hold each other accountable as well. As new people come into the organization, your cultural influencers help them understand what is the way we engage, what is the way we behave and interact around each other. And so you can do things, I mean, giving one more example, that's an example related to focusing on team. When it comes to building meaningful relationships, what are we doing to allow that to happen? Do we have a culture that actually wink, wink, nod, nod, yes, everyone gets a lunch break, but really we should all be working through lunch to prove that we're working hard? Or do leaders and managers go, you know what, it's important to stop for 15 minutes and just chat with people at lunch, right? And I have to intentionally do that myself. I have to, as the leader here, establish that it's important for us to kind of have those chances to do that. And we leave room for informal activities well. And some of those informal activities, it can't always be, let's go to the bar and get, you know, drink, right? Although we actually just did that on Friday, right? Friday was after work. We all gathered and we had a, you know, just, we've been going through a really busy time and it was like, let's just do this together. People didn't have to show up, but every single person showed up. But we also do things that, you know, not everyone wants to drink. Not everyone's an extrovert. So we can do things like we support local causes. We're going to a gala. We've hosted a table at the Rainbow Resource Center in our organization where we work. And we have it's a cause that we support. And we've invited our staff to come out to it, right? We, for the Mental Health Association, we bike in a bike-a-thon. So we look for kind of informal ways that connect to the community and our purpose. But we do need that a little bit. But sometimes things organically happen. We had someone got married the other week, and I didn't lead it. No leader did it. But some of her peers said, let's have a potluck and, you know, a celebration for someone who's getting married, right? So absolutely, it's a both-and approach.
I love that idea of celebrations, celebrating each person individually within the organization. I think that that's always helpful to make someone feel like they're part of something. And then I also really love that maxim. It's that saying that says teams that play together, stay together.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things that we found, one of the questions of the 20 questions that I've alluded to already was, I have fun at work. Right. And mm-hmm. Guess how many people who like where they work have fun at work? I don't have the exact stats in front of me, but it was close to 90%. Right. So most people who like where they work also have fun at work. Right. So, you know, let's laugh a little bit. Let's have a good time. And when we do that, I mean, it can be invigorating and people will get back to work and work even harder. It's OK to have fun at work. We spend a vast majority of our waking hours at work. Wouldn't it be nice to have a little fun there?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think this is all so helpful for thinking about people wanting to be in a workplace that's healthy and for thought leaders and leaders in organizations to be creating a healthy culture. Is there anything else you wanted our listeners to walk away with from today's show?
You know, we are in the business, again, of helping organizations become places where people like to work. We need other people to get excited about that, right? We're a very small organization, and while we're very passionate and vocal, we need other places people to go, you know what, this would be really cool. I want my workplace to be better than average. And so our goal and our hope of writing the culture question was to contribute that to it. One of the things that we found is why we speak and teach a lot in our role as trainers and speakers. One of the best way to get information out there is through books. So I hope you pick up the culture question. It's available on Amazon and Barnes and Nobles, and of course all the 800 CEO Read. It's available in audio, although I don't think it's quite out yet. It'll probably be another 3 or 4 days a week. But when you read this book, and if you find it interesting and find it helpful, for those of you who are not in leadership positions, take it to your leader and say, hey, I've just read this book. There's some really neat things in here that I think we could do.
Oh, that's really great. Is there anywhere else that you'd guide listeners to so they could find more information about you?
Absolutely. So our website is Achieve Center. And a center, we are Canadian-based, although we do work in the U.S. as well. Center is with an R-E, surprise, surprise, right? So Achieve Center, CENTRE.com. And you can find a ton of free resources on the website, including videos and handouts and resource manuals that, again, are dedicated and focused on inspiring people to create better workplaces. I have a personal blog from my first book called TheOrdinaryLeader.com. That's a whole other story about why I would call myself ordinary, but I'll just quickly say that as leaders, we don't arrive, we don't get there, and one of my ways of making that point was to use the term ordinary. So you can check that out at TheOrdinaryLeader.com. So both of those websites will have a variety of information for you.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Randy, for providing the valuable information. Do check out the culture question. And for our guests, remember to tune in next week for Get Yourself a Job, Monday at 4 p.m. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.